Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. David Lowe. Today we're going to be discussing dreams, the road to universal spirituality. It seems that everybody lately has been having more intense dreams and sometimes even prophetic dreams. And there's a great deal that you can learn from your dreams that will help you in terms of your spiritual development. So Dr. Lowe has written a book on universal spirituality and has a practice where he goes through dream work with people that are interested in learning about the spirituality lessons in dreams. And today we're going to give you some information about that. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's always great to be here with you all.
So, when did you first connect dreams and some of the more, I guess, particularly significant dreams that you were having with this idea that universal spirituality, that dreams might be a kind of a playbook for the important things in your spiritual life?
It would really have to be when I started transcendental meditation, which I guess was the first phase of my real spirituality. I began having a lot of sort of transcendent experiences, and it became very evident to me that there is a deeper dimension of human reality beyond language, beyond culture, deeper than all the religions, which they all have in common, which we all have in common, and which we can get back to, we can access, and dreams are the most readily available and universal means that all of us have of getting there. Lots of us have special gifts like clairvoyance or whatever, but everybody dreams. And insofar as that's true, we all have that faculty of going deeper within ourselves by exploring them.
It's also true that, or it's probably true, that animals dream. And I guess that's something that you see when you have a dog, and the dog is like, you know, running in its sleep or doing other things in its sleep,
right,
and obviously appears to be dreaming. How far do you think the dream world goes into the animal kingdom? Do you think it's all the way through? Or
I think people like Carl Jung thought, and pretty much all humanistic existential people, spiritual people oriented in dream work, think that, you know, dreams, well, they have psychobiological functions with, you know, REM sleep and so forth. Mm-hmm. And there are particular brainwave patterns. And you can see that in all the higher mammals and modifications of that slightly more clearly in all of the lower mammals. And so pretty much all the way down in the animal kingdom, we do find some, you know, even if it's only primitive brainwave activity, which more than likely hints at or has to do with the basic spiritual, physiological aspects of dreams in humans, although on maybe a more primitive and less developed level. So yes, absolutely. Animals can't talk to us and tell us that they dream, but they do have very, very similar brainwave profiles to us in that regard. Yeah.
And animals do appear to us in dreams, including our animals, you know, so it would be interesting to see if they can, you know, do more directed dreaming. Like if they need to tell you something, if they can come into your dream and communicate it that way, if you're not really listening to them in real life. I mean, it might be possible.
You know, that's a great area for personal development is if you have a pet and you want to sort of attune yourself to that pet, then you can sort of contemplate, think about, give it a name, and ask it sort of profound questions, profound, easy questions, and try to get a dream about it. You can, and mm-hmm. you can strike up those mythopoetic communications which all ancient peoples had with spirits and deities in the natural world, of course, including animals. Yeah, oh yes, absolutely.
Now, there are some drugs that we sometimes give patients, and if given over a long period of time, they interfere with REM sleep, and that would be like Valium and the related medications. Some of them are sleep medicines, too, so they're taken over time. And as doctors, we're told that this can the lack of REM sleep can have health consequences. So that would probably be the lack of dreaming, because that's what happens in REM, right?
Yeah, it's really intriguing. They have definite psychobiological functions. If people aren't allowed to, the only way that you can stop people from dreaming is to wake them up when they start doing REM sleep. And, of course, that means waking somebody up an hour after they go to sleep for, you know, all night long, and therefore the person doesn't get enough sleep. And within a week and a half, they pretty much collapse with chronic fatigue and depression, unless they're allowed to start dreaming again. So those experiments didn't go beyond about a week and a half or 2 weeks. So, and then they had a big rebound effect when people were allowed to sleep again for a whole, you know, they for like the next couple of nights, they spent 3 or 4 hours of dreaming, 5 hours of dreaming, instead of just 1 hour of dreaming, you know, catch up. So there was like a compensatory effect. Yeah, absolutely. They have important, no one completely understands what dreams do, but that's because we never will understand them totally if we only study them empirically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why sleep deprivation is a form of torture. What, you know, and it's used and it works, because you got, there is, I mean, you not only get chronically depressed, but you actually can go a little crazy. I mean, it can, your reality will start to distort.
Yeah,
with sleep deprivation.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the dreams really are, I think, probably the best way to understand dreams overall in terms of why purely empirical studies will never elucidate their complete functioning, is to realize that, you know, dreams simply represent the spiritual part of our being, which needs to have its own cycle of activity. It's just like our physical being has its cycle of activity. When we sleep, our dream or spiritual aspect has its cycle of activity. And that's what dreams are about, really. That's one of the things which they represent. Yeah.
So you do dream work for other people, or you help them do the dream work, which is interpretation of dreams and kind of incorporating it into a larger spiritual picture. Would you like to give, first of all, a little bit of information about your website that they can look at? Why don't you do that right now, and then they can take a look at that during the interview?
Yeah, it's David Lowe, MSS, and Masters of Science, David Lowe, MSPhD.com. No E on the name, David Lowe, L-O-W, MSPhD.com. So, yeah, there are two dimensions of dream work. One is the intellectual discursive level, which is interpretation in its usual sense. Then there's the deeper emotional body feeling level, in which dreams offer us information, allowing us to, you know, directly resolve the deep-seated feeling issues, which are more powerful. On the cognitive level, it can be very powerful to work with dreams because, you know, when you realize the deeper truth about something, that you realize all the ways in which you were kidding yourself about it, and it just blows you away. But you know what the real truth is. So you can have powerful therapeutic emotional breakthrough experiences working with dreams cognitively. That happens with people that I see all the time. The deeper emotional level requires more kind of a therapeutic atmosphere to work in. But yeah, so those are the two levels that you can do dream work on. Go ahead.
I have a very interesting dream that I remember vividly that I would be curious to see your comments about.
Okay. If it's real long, we can't do much, but go ahead.
This is short. This is short, and it's strange. Okay, I was walking in the woods and on a path, and I looked over, and I noticed that there was this giant yellow snake, and I mean giant. It was probably 2 feet in diameter across, and very long. And it was far away from me. It was like, you know, over probably 50, 100 feet away. And it was like in a tree or around a tree. And so I said, well, that's pretty far away. And then I turned the corner, and I realized that the snake was around me. In other words, I looked down and saw its head, and the body was wrapping around me. So
wow.
I took the head, and I forced it up. It was a very strong snake. And I started to hit the head on something hard, like a tree. I guess it was a tree. I don't know. But it was something hard to knock the snake out so it would release me. And what I noticed in the dream was that I wasn't afraid. I had no fear whatsoever. But it took a great deal of physical effort to knock the snake out. And the snake didn't bite me. I wasn't afraid the snake was going to bite me, but I knew that I had to knock it out or, you know, I don't know what. I guess it was big enough it could eat me. You know, it was a giant snake. It was yellow. And I remember the eyes very well, and I just remember I've got to knock this thing out so to get it off of me. I didn't want to kill it, but I just didn't want to be eaten by it, okay? It was like, and I've never had a snake dream like that before, ever.
Wow.
I mean, it was really weird. Big yellow snake.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know if it was poisonous or not. I just know that it was giant. It was big snake.
Right. Wow. The first thing that comes to mind is the universal, that is what snakes are, universal symbol for spiritual initiation and growth.
Right.
That's one of the profound things you find in connection with imagery and myths about snakes is they go up the caduceus, they go up the spine, kundalini. They are the bite of a snake. When you get bitten by a venomous snake, the body undergoes transformation, you know, which is why snake bite is predicted quite often. A snake bite is represents initiation, spiritual initiation. Mm-hmm. But the fact that this thing is so big, you know, and that you have to knock it out. What strikes me offhand is that you have this great spiritual capability, and it could all be released too soon, too quickly, too powerfully, and that you have to sort of, you know, knock it out in order not to.
Yeah, knock it out, yeah.
Right.
Well, it's
so
interesting, David. I've been guided not to meditate. Now, all my life, every guidance was meditate, meditate, meditate. But in the last few months, I've been told not to meditate, and I'm told it's actually dangerous for me to meditate. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So that would go along with the dream, because a spiritual practice, which would raise my vibrational rate, I'm told not to do.
What that tells me is that what you're doing now in your daily life, at all hours of the day, eating, sleeping, intimacy, work, casual conversation, that is your meditation.
I'd love to meditate, and I would love to go. I mean, it's not that I don't want to meditate. I've always loved meditation, but it's something that it's not good for me right now because maybe something would happen prematurely.
Well, yeah, it would. I've never quite. Well, you know, I've heard of cases where spiritual masters say don't meditate. Where, I've been given guidance myself. From within and without, don't, you know, go real light in the meditation. There comes a time when, and it's really easy to do inner work to sort of escape from the world, not look at your personal problems, and just sit in a dark place and think a lot and meditate. But there comes a time when we have to just be in the world totally and completely. But it sounds like, you know, what you're doing already is, on the outside, is your meditation. Yeah, I think you have that.
I didn't link that with the dream, but that would be right because I had to knock the snake out rather than let it bite me. And there was no question. I wasn't afraid of it biting me. It was like I wasn't going to let it bite me. You know, it was like that was it just wasn't going to happen.
And it didn't.
I knocked the snake out, and it went limp, and I went away. You know. That's very interesting. So, I wonder why it was yellow.
Well, if it's yellow, it could have been blue, it could have been white. Blue, white, yellow were all kind of spiritual colors. Yellow, the color of fire and so forth, the higher chakras and so on. But the fact that it's so huge, that tells me what a destiny. Or what, you know, we're all ultimately God's self. But maybe there's something beyond that. Maybe there's something particularly glorious and powerful and wonderful in line when that yellow snake materializes itself in whatever destiny you have, or who knows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it was. Well, thank you for that. It was, again, I didn't connect it with the directive not to meditate, but I bet they are linked. It was probably just showing me that I think I'm waiting, just holding my vibrational level at this level until something else happens, you know, which is probably more external. I think that's, you know, I'm just in a holding mode.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. Sure. That's probably what you feel like. I mean, nothing's happening now. It's like we're just circling.
Exactly.
And it's weird. We're certainly not going anywhere with nine planets in retrograde. Nothing's happening.
I do nothing but weep in my spirituality and meditation and chanting. Something's going to happen, but it's going to be enormous when it does. That's all I know.
Right. So tell the, the little example there with my dream and your interpretation. If somebody has a particular dream that really stands out, like my snake dream did, they can contact you via your website. Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. The email through the website, david@worldspirituality.com. Yeah. Let me just run through briefly what I do. I get to know the person. I can't help them if I can't get to know them, especially what they're going through, what the person's mind is dwelling on. Practical issues, dreams always and invariably, usually, have something to say about practical issues that the person is dwelling on. And then I get the dream in a lot of detail. I can't do readings. My skills are both analytical and intuitive, but I can't do readings in the normal psychic sense of the word. I need time to look at it, right? So if someone calls me, I will insist on getting the dream and calling them back later because I need it. I need a moment to look at it. Things start boom, 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 start falling into place. But usually you can do it through email, combination of phone call and emails to look at a dream. And I always come up with a secondary, less plausible interpretation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what's real important is what I do, what I call an ethical check-in, to the effect that, you know, the dream is telling the dreamer what the thing's saying, not me. If it's me, the client, and the dream, we all interact to see what the thing's trying to tell the person. And it really has to have the sense that you know, the dreamer is the one who really fathoms the dream. No one else can help him or her understand it as well as he ultimately does himself. So it can't come from me primarily. It has to come from the dreamer. If he doesn't agree with me totally 100%, that's fine. So there needs to be that. I'm not telling him what it means, but it cannot work that way. It can't work that way. Yeah, so it's fun to do dream work with individuals and groups.
So what are the overall categories of, I guess, it's information, but it's also spiritual guidance that can come through dreams.
Sure.
You know, what are the categories of, information and guidance that one can get through dreams?
That's such an issue. I would say first, always and invariably, dreams represent profound emotional issues. They're you know, pictorial representations of body sensations. Okay, so in a therapeutic atmosphere, you can interact with characters in your dreams, you can rehearse your dreams in real life, and actually, you know, come to terms with profound emotional issues. On the cognitive level, there's always something to be understood as far as directives or ideas or suggestions about things. And since they are a blueprint of the body-mind complex, like, you know, dreams represent in some sense like a blueprint or a representation of the body-mind. Jeremy Taylor, for example, who just recently passed away, probably the most important guy in dreams in this country in the last century, he says that it makes sense that every dream has an aspect about that reflects the state of the body-mind. So they have a health message. Okay. Even a very short, simple dream, if you explore it deeply enough in all its aspects, in all its possible ramifications and interpretations, has something to say about the body-mind complex in terms of physical health. The physical health level, there's the emotion level, and there's the intellectual, discursive level. And, yeah, so three different levels, four levels of spiritual level, many layers of meaning, and especially with a complex dream, are available to be interpreted and understood and felt directly when you work with dreams. Sure.
So for people that don't dream at all or don't remember their dreams very well, what can they do so that they can start remembering?
The biggest overall thing is just to take a greater interest in your spirituality. And the way to make that happen, or the concrete things you can do to start dreaming more often, is that go buy a dream book and read about them. Make yourself take an explicit interest in dreams. I mean, we're human beings. What makes us special? Other animals eat, sleep, reproduce, bring home the bacon. We just do that in more sophisticated ways. What makes us human? You know, dreams are one of those things. So focus on the things that make us human, special animals in this world. That's what, you know, the things that we specialize in, if you will, of the deeper contemplative dimensions of who we are, and dreams are the primary available route to that understanding. So get a book on dreams, read about them, and say to yourself out loud, I will remember my dreams if you go to sleep. And number three, get that dream journal and stick it next to your bed with a pen in it. Those are probably the three things you can do, concrete things, to get yourself to start remembering dreams. Get a book, get that notebook, say out loud, I want to remember my dreams. But more deeply, just take a bigger interest in spirituality, really.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the main thing. Yeah, but, you know, dreams, it's a mystery. Obviously, we don't all remember dreams all the time, although they happen all the time. So there's no complete answer as to why somebody doesn't remember dreams. But if you do those things, you are far more likely to remember them. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I think that, you know, at least a lot of the dreams that I have are a different quality than, say, that snake dream was. The snake dream had a different, well, first of all, it was in color, okay. I mean, not everybody dreams in color, right?
Right. Sure.
I mean, I'm not sure all my dreams are in color.
Most of mine are not, exactly. Exactly.
So, or they might be a little bit in color, but kind of that muted stuff that's, you know, not really not like the yellow snake.
Right.
And there's feelings in dreams. You know, there's very strong feelings with a dream, which can be very important in terms of the interpretation. You know,
absolutely.
But it's like you can't really remember so much about the activity, but the feeling of the dream. You know, I once had a feeling, very strong feeling, that someone was going to try to kill me, okay, and it turned out that they were going to try to kill me. And that was like more of a prophetic dream, okay, so that probably saved my life. So that was a feeling dream, not a, you know, yellow snake dream, which is
exactly.
Very different. Very, very different. So you have to pay attention to the emotion, just what's different about the dream. I mean, for me, the yellow snake dream, it was very beautiful outside. I mean, it was in a beautiful woods with a lot of green color and yellow. The snake, of course, was yellow. So, and I don't really remember color being pointed out so vividly in most of my dreams.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's really, I mean, dreams with a lot of feeling in them are really important to pay attention to.
Right.
You know, those hunches, those intuitions, really what you're doing when you take an interest in dreams and you begin to have a dialogue with them, you are deepening your capacity to feel intuitively, to know intuitively with your body. You know, so a way to increase your intuition, to increase your attunement with your physical reality, is to explore your dreams. Yeah, so their feelings are real important. Absolutely right. Let me say one more thing I want to do really quick. There's a supplement called galantamine, G-A-L-A-N-T-A-M-I-N-E, galantamine, which has been shown to increase people's frequency of lucid dreaming and remembering dreams to begin with.
Yeah.
I'm all for more natural methods like meditation and so forth, more spirituality. Mm-hmm. the supplement option is there.
What is that? Is it an herb or something else?
I don't know what it is, but a good friend of mine is doing a lot of research on it. Whether it's synthetic or not, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Galantamine, but it's available, and it seems to help people remember dreams more often and to dream lucidly more often.
I'm going to tell you what I was eating when I had that snake dream, and it's known to cause vivid dreams. Okay? Now, this may freak you out. You may have never known this. Welsh rabbit.
Welsh rabbit.
Did you know that? Welsh rabbit, yeah. It's Stouffer's Welsh rabbit. It's a cheese sauce that I was putting on crackers and some vegetables.
Uh-huh.
But Welsh rabbit, or rarebit, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Uh-huh.
It has nothing to do with rabbits. It's rarebit, I guess. But anyway, Welsh rarebit is known to cause vivid dreams. And I was actually had some before that snake dream.
How do you spell it? You have to tell me.
Welsh rarebit. It's spelled like rabbit, R-I-B-B-I-T, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a cheese sauce, okay?
Uh-huh. Okay.
But this you might try it. It's like $2.50, or you can get it on sale for probably $1.50. Stouffer's, Stouffer's little thing in the frozen food section.
Stouffer. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's cheap, and you could try it. It's like, it's good on vegetables or crackers or, just I put it on broccoli because I like cheese sauce on broccoli, and I don't want to make cheese sauce. It's just easier
I'll try it over a period of time to be sure that it isn't just a placebo effect.
Yeah, you can tell me email me if you get more vivid dreams on it because
that
might be a really cheap way to do it.
Yeah, right.
But I do remember that I was eating Welsh rarebit around that time. I hadn't put that together before.
Okay.
But, yeah. Because I was thinking, what else causes vivid dreams? And that's the only thing I've ever heard, is that food. So.
Okay. Well, there must
but
be
maybe
something
there's something in it that causes the color to come out, and it's vivid
because of
the color. Yeah. Because I don't remember those colors in other dreams. I just don't.
Wow.
So.
Okay.
So, there are common dreams that everybody has, being undressed in public, taking a test, losing teeth, being pregnant, all those things. So are there general reasons that we have these dreams, these common dreams?
Well, the major thing to understand about most dreams like that is that there are common psychological tensions that most of us experience in life, especially as we're growing up and learning the world and getting to know people, getting to know our work and dealing with everyday stresses, financial, mm-hmm. personal, intimacy, work. There are times when we're embarrassed, there are times when we're defensive, there are times when we're insecure about what we're doing, and all that's very common, and those kinds of dreams just reflect that. Okay, and mm-hmm. their messages are important. If we dream a lot about being naked in public, it's because we're too insecure, we're too defensive, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like we don't have to be that defensive. We don't have to be that insecure. We don't have to suffer that much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to care too much about what people think about all that sort of thing. Losing your teeth, anger, frustration, aggression. Sometimes anger over losing capacities as you get older,
mm-hmm.
Driving a car, being out of falling, being out of control, being way over your head in something, being completely.
I think I told you about this dream that I had when I was falling, and I'm kind of a rebel, that's like my personality. And so I had heard that you never land, you never actually. When you're falling, you wake up before you land. So I said, I'm not going to wake up before I land. And then I landed, and it hurt like hell.
Yeah.
That was like my little lesson of being a rebel.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but the point is you can do things that probably aren't good for you, and then maybe you shouldn't have done that. But yeah, it hurt like hell.
I mean,
it really did.
In lucid dreaming, you can, it is true that, the conventional wisdom, and it is correct about lucid dreams, is that everything in a dream does represent part of the dreamer, and that in the process of dealing with it therapeutically, you can use the characters and the events and dreams, lucid or not, to help yourself.
Yeah, well, I do lucid dreaming all the time. So my decision within the dream to keep falling and not wake up, rather than wake up to stay asleep, was, I guess that is lucid dreaming, really.
What's really interesting is that for people to understand the very fact that there are can be physical sensations in dreams. But dreams do indeed represent a valid reality. They do actually represent a higher reality, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so you can hurt yourself. And, I mean, psychically, maybe, you can hurt yourself. And you need to be careful in some lucid dreams.
I've also had a dream that I was dreaming, which is really a neat sensation. That really is a dream within a dream.
Yeah, that's
I think these are things
common.
That a lot of, I mean, when you're studying lucid dreaming, there are things that happen to people, you know, often.
And what's so interesting is that the International Association for the Study of Dreams, the IASD, lucid dreaming is a huge topic. The healing aspects of it, even the physical healing aspect, you can channel your energy and you can do Reiki and so forth on yourself more effectively.
Or on other people.
and to actually affect physical healing.
Yeah.
It's infrequent, but it does happen. The therapeutic aspects, the spiritual journey aspects, on the experimental work, which is going on to, you know, people getting together at the same time, same place, in mutual dreaming, and then confirming it later with a third party, the double-blind experiment and so forth. All that's being done. It's really cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you were going to recommend a book on lucid dreaming, which one would you recommend?
Robert Wagoner, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. That's the best one. Comprehensive, a good blend of personal experience and textbook structure to it. It's a manual as well as an account of a personal journey. I think we should understand everybody can learn lucid dreaming to some extent, But there's no question at the same time, and Robert would agree with this, and a bunch of other people I know who are into this do agree that, you know, some people just have an aptitude for it, are cut out to do it well and to do it a lot. A certain spiritual profile, if you will. Some people, you know, people who follow esoteric traditions naturally, but also, you know, anyone, people have the aptitude to different degrees, and we can all learn it to some extent, but some people are just cut out for it. They have the aptitude.
And some people, that's their main spiritual path. I mean, it really is. Because their dreams are so... There's this guy on the internet that is talking about QAnon, and his name's Praying Medic. He's a former medic paramedic. But he shares his dreams throughout all of these different things that he's commenting on, and his dreams are just amazing. You know, he remembers them so well. So that's a very important part of his spiritual path is his dreaming.
Praying Medic.
Praying Medic, yeah. He has really good QAnon interpretations, you know.
Okay. So if I put in Praying Medic, I'll find it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, as in Praying Medic.
Right, except he's a medic. But, yeah, because, I mean, when he shares these dreams, I go, God, my dreams aren't that, you know, like, it's like, I mean.
Yeah, the one thing to recognize.
It's his main spiritual path, I think, you know.
Yeah, so for a lot of people should recognize it, you know. I mean, if you dream vividly, it can take you an hour and a half to write down your dreams every day. And some people are in that dilemma. You want to record your dreams, but it takes you so long to write them down, you know. So if you can just record a few major images and a few major themes in a dream and then look at them later, that can bring back the whole thing later on. And you don't have to work with everything in a dream to get a lot out of it. So even if you have time, just 5 minutes a day to jot down a few major images about what you saw, that's all you need to start working with them effectively. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have any lucid dreaming experiences that you can share?
Yes. I went through a huge phase of years ago in which I had basically a series of spectacular dreams, what I call higher reality exposure dreams. And I've surveyed the IASD membership on this. A lot of people have these. You know, they have nothing to do with, this is after I got my major initiation from my guru, okay? It's a series of spectacular dreams going up into higher dimensions, higher planes of reality than I've ever been to before. But that they were meant to be instructive about higher, hey, mm-hmm. this exists, this is real. This isn't just something that you've read about in books. This isn't just Seth or whatever. This can happen to you. You know, that's what mm-hmm. these dreams were about. They're purely educational exposure above and beyond anything on Earth.
Right.
That's what they were for. But the more recent powerful lucid dream I had to do with childhood issues. Mm-hmm. This was only about a few months ago, the first lucid dream I've had in years, really. Well, maybe they happen about once every 4 or 5 months, but this one was real important. Basically, it was I was fighting with a small child. 100% mm-hmm. say, wait a minute, you're part of me. We can't fight like this. We need to get to know each other and love each other. And, mm-hmm. He didn't open his arms in complete love and acceptance, but he was confused for a moment. Like, huh? What's going on mm-hmm. with that? So whatever that inner child aspect is, which I still am alienated from, it began to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of a important lucid dream, which happened to me, and which maybe more dreams like that will happen in the future. But there's a process of personal evolution going on there, of getting to know my deeper self. Yeah, so that was important.
So what about dreams where we communicate with people that have passed on?
Yeah, happens a lot. I mean, a lot of the time, I think, when we see deceased relatives and so forth, they're just symbolic of something.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is any emotional content of any kind in the dream, which is meaningful and powerful, then it is an authentic visitation dream.
Right.
Yeah, so it happens. And one thing that lucid dreamers go through, one phase of what a serious lucid dreamer, spiritual journey lucid dreamer goes through, is wanting to contact previous relatives, deceased people with mm-hmm. whom he had issues, which he needs to clear up, that sort of thing. And that can be done. You know, and the great dilemma, of course, is everything you dream is part of the dreamer, but it's also true that when you dream of other entities, they also have their own reality. So to what extent is the person you, and to what extent does the person represent his own separate reality?
Mm-hmm.
The great philosophical puzzles that you wrestle with as you dream journey further and further into lucid dreaming especially. But yes, very powerful, relevant. Dreams with deceased people, if they're meaningful and powerful in any way, they are visitation dreams. Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there examples of these visitation dreams where things are communicated that then turn out to be true, like, you know, where a will or jewelry is hidden? You know, because people die suddenly, and, you know, we're not prepared to die. I mean, we hide the will, or we hide the jewelry, or we hide the money somewhere, and, you know, our family knows we have it, but they don't know where it is.
Yeah, you know, examples of that are legion, and I don't know any offhand. I can say that in my own experience, my father said, after he passed away, I was wondering about his own background and about how it affected him and about whether or not certain medical conditions or whether, you know, my own spiritual state was mm-hmm. affected by his being the one who raised me. You know, this is years and years ago. And he showed up in a dream and he said, "They're researching it, Dave. They're researching it." So the implication of that is, you know, don't worry. This is being taken care of by some higher power. It's all going to work out like it's supposed to. But
right.
there are the Akashic records or whatever where this information mm-hmm. can be found in some sense. Yeah, so absolutely.
So, you know, one of the questions is, does lucid dreaming have any concrete uses? Like, that would be one. Say you're missing some vital information or whatever, and you need to ask that to somebody who's deceased. Are there other examples of how you can have very concrete uses of lucid dreaming?
the best, the greatest overall concrete use of lucid dreams is to, well, the things that your mind dwells on in terms of physical and emotional, personal issues, those get represented by, you know, often unpleasant things in your dream. So, you know, in your lucid dreaming journey or in your non-lucid dreaming journey, writing them down, then you will sooner or later be challenged with entities and beings and unpleasant things which will confront you and which, mm-hmm. you know, you will learn to deal with. You mm-hmm. must embrace them. So, you know, in terms of concrete uses, what are your issues? What are the things that frighten you? What are the things which keep yeah. you feeling inferior and so forth? All that sort of thing. And what are the most intimidating, frightening things that are showing up in your dreams?
Those right. two are key. And a common example of that is a common story is that a guy dreams every night that he's being chased by three, you know, rabid, nasty dogs. And
right.
He's very, very frightened, and he runs every night. But then one night he just turns around and faces them, and they turn into masters or spiritual whatever and
yeah.
say, you've passed the test. You know, you need to face your fears.
Right, right. It's usually more gradual than that. I mean, running away is part of the learning process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be such a coward. I got to turn around and face these things. But, and it is a step-by-step process where you realize, with greater and greater levels of lucidity, you finally get to the point where you say, this is a dream. I'm dreaming. Wow.
Right. That's a lucid dream when you realize within the dream that you're dreaming.
Right. But there are different levels. I mean, all dreams have a certain level of lucidity, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are lower levels of lucidity in which the person doesn't have enough awareness to actually alter the course of the dream.
Right. But knows they're dreaming.
Right. Most dreams are involuntary. They happen to us. Mm-hmm. In a totally lucid dream, you take it over and, you know, do what you want to your
right.
advantage and so forth. But there's a sliding scale in between. Most so-called lucid dreams, the person not 100% lucid. So it's usually mm-hmm. a mixture of things that are happening to him involuntarily and efforts which he or she is making on their own. But it's a
yeah.
process of becoming more aware, learning not to run away from something, rehearsing in real life, next time this is what I'll do when the thing shows up, and then affirming it to yourself, remembering it, and so forth, using all the suggestion, and then having the dream later on and doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think the two things that I do most often is healing, because people report to me they see me in their dreams a lot. And then warning people not to steal from me, or if they've already stolen from me, to give it back, because that gets reported a lot too. So those are the two things I do. I help people, and then I guess I still help them by getting them to do the right thing when they've taken something. Or one employee was thinking about stealing. I got her before she ever did.
Wow.
She admitted, Dr. Cobb, you came into my dream and warned me not to steal from you. And I said, yeah, you know, in general, you don't want to steal from a clairvoyant. It's just a general rule, you know.
Right, right. You
might not get away with it.
Right. I have a pretty successful meetup in my house every month called Lucid Dreaming Seekers. Okay, it's mm-hmm. a meetup. We got about 70 people in it. And two of the people in it have dreamed of me instructing them about things before
yeah,
I ever met
well.
Them.
Right.
Or ever met. Yeah,
yeah.
So that kind
so
of
you're definitely in people's dreams.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, I think we have agreements. I mean, I don't think my patients are random at all. I think the patients that get to me are very specific. We probably have a lot of past life relationships. And
yeah.
I was in Starbucks the other day, and this guy came up to me, and he'd chopped, I think I told this story before, I don't know if it's on your show, but he had chopped his finger off, the tip of his finger, and I fixed it in the ER. And he came up to me, and he said, I really want to thank you. He said, he was a CEO of a company. He said, if I hadn't chopped my finger off, I wouldn't have, you know, started, because he read a lot of the stuff in my waiting room about spirituality and meditation and
right.
asked me some questions about it. He says, but I became a different kind of leader because of my injury. And, you know, I meditate regularly now, and spirituality is very important to me. And he said, if I hadn't chopped my finger off, and I think it was his index finger, because that's faith, which is interesting.
Wow.
And then he said, I just would never have gotten into that, which is probably not true. He probably would have gotten into it a different way.
Right.
But the lessons in faith are always the index finger. So the injury to the index finger, if you just happen to smash your index finger, a lot of spiritual people do, and the
yeah.
and the answer is, you know, your higher guidance is telling you to have faith in something, and you're questioning it to a degree that's not good.
Yeah,
so
the
have
pointing
more faith.
Finger, after all.
Yeah. So I believe all the patients that come here are guided here, and the ones that get really mad and leave for over stupid stuff, they're supposed to go.
Right.
You know, it's okay. I tell the front desk, don't worry. Let them go. They're not supposed to be
right.
here.
So, yeah.
But I think that kind of, you have to understand that relationships, all the people out there, you know,
yeah.
if you end up with the 70 people in your lucid dreaming or your circle of people, those people are there for, you know, a really good reason. It's
yeah.
not just random. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real important to see. One thing about dreaming always instructs us in synchronicity. Because, I mean,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, you want your dream reality and your real reality to be the same. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what dreams, I think, ultimately instruct us in, is that all these higher realities, all these planes of higher reality, when they all merge somehow into a single experiential reality, you're there. You're enlightened. You know, so with enough dreaming, we understand enough about all these different realities to understand, finally experience, that they're all one reality. And, yeah, so dreams are important, and they definitely help us along step by step the way we're supposed to go. Yeah.
I've always had the very strong feeling that when I die, or when I've died before, it's as if you're waking up out of a dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, say you had a really bad lifetime. You know, you
right.
you were born, you had all this poverty, and you died of dysentery, you know, which is a bad way to die, and, you know, at the age of 8. And you wake up out of the dream and you go, God, that was terrible. You know, like, what did I learn from that? You know, so, but or you can have a wonderful dream. You know, you could live a long, fulfilled life and die in your sleep. And, you know, but it's, I'm almost positive that when you die, there's a real sense of waking up out of a dream. And some of the dreams, it's like, boy, I'm glad that wasn't real. You know, like if you were tortured or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
it's like,
absolutely.
It's going to be just like that, just like waking up out of a bad dream and going, God, I'm glad that wasn't real.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest surprise connected with dying. You know, people do go to a higher reality in some sense, and yeah, they may have to suffer and so forth, but if they had bad karma and whatnot this time around, but you really realize, there's no question, you really realize that it was all just a dream.
Right.
The
lifetime
we're
right.
having now,
yeah.
this is only the major dream in the mind of God, you know, there
right.
are all these other,
right.
yeah, and one thing that happens to some lucid dreamers, which, and
mm-hmm.
this is like, it's called sort of a cautionary note. Robert Wagner had the experience of, he's had the experience of, he has a lucid dream. He wakes up 6 or 7 times, each time into a different reality. He starts to get real concerned, am I ever going to come back to my real life? Then he finally
I did
lived.
That in a very interesting way during my spiritual development in the early 90s. And it was controlled not by me, but from a higher level, probably my higher
right.
self. What I did is I went into the dream world, and I was in the dream world, then I came back to the projector, which was like in the void. Then I went
right.
and woke up in this reality. Then I went back to the projector. Then I went back in the dream world. I did that like 4 or 5 times. And then when I woke up, I was my guidance was, where the projector is what you need to understand exists. In other words, consciousness can be projected into this reality or into the dream world, or probably, like your lucid dreamer, 5 or 6 other realities. You know, it's not just 1 or 2. And it's the projector the higher level projector that's reality.
Yeah.
True reality.
And finally, just getting to that higher level projector. So a major thing you can do when you're lucid dreaming is it's a whole lot.
And then lucidly project yourself into all these realities, you know, lucidly, so that you're not the victim, you know.
Yeah, and so...
In a lucid dream, people aren't victims. They just aren't. You know, they are aware of what they're doing, and they're not fear-based dreams.
Right.
You know,
by definition, they are not victims. So, yeah, I think that probably another overall thing that people should be aware of as far as lucid dreaming goes is that the best overall thing you can do is just to haul off and ask the whole dream, show me something. What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
What's next? What can I do for my next breakthrough? What do I need to learn next? You're literally asking the whole dreamscape that question, you know.
When I get bored, I will do things in dreams. And the one I remember is a big pogo stick. It was a giant pogo stick. I was on this pogo stick, and I was, like, jumping over mountains. And I was just jumping and flying and going all over the place, just having a blast on this pogo stick.
Uh-huh.
And what I realized when I woke up is I was bored in my real life.
Wow.
I was just bored. You know, I wanted to do something really fun.
Right. Well, it's interesting. In college, I did a lot of skydiving, and that was fun. And sometimes that continued to happen in dreams later, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not boring.
Yeah.
It can be fun.
Right. Well, it's probably a lot safer to do, you know, flying or, you know, hand gliding or parachuting in a dream. You know, it's
less
cheaper, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure, really.
Yeah. So, well, there are some prophetic dreams. I know that you've had a couple that really probably saved your life or prevented major injury. Would you like to relay some of that?
The only one I can think of offhand as far as in terms of preventing physical injury, it's a really stressful time. I was living in Decatur, you know, suburb right next to you all, and I was in a very stressful period of my life, you know, losing jobs, not being able to hold a relationship together, all that sort of thing. And going in graduate school, struggling to keep my grades up, and I was going through a lot of stuff. And I had a dream. I had a dentist appointment, and I was meditating before going to the dentist appointment. And in the meditation, I sort of dozed off. Well, in meditation, I had a vision of my car and me in the car driving right out onto the perimeter highway, and having a big blowout flat tire, and then getting into a fatal accident or a very serious
mm-hmm.
accident.
Right.
So,
which can happen easily.
Yeah, right.
I can tell people that. It's very easy.
Yeah, so a voice said, check it now.
Mm-hmm.
Check it now. So what? So I went out and looked at the car, and sure enough, there was this air bubble in the side of the tire, which would
mm-hmm.
have blown out if I'd gone out on the highway.
Yeah.
So that's probably the single biggest one.
But that's a very important point. You know, if people have a dream with an instruction in it like that and a thing that could be really true, I mean, it's not a fantastical thing at all, they need to pay attention. You don't just need to say, oh, that was just a dream, and shrug it off. It could be dangerous to do that. I can't tell you how many people have told me that they dreamed that they had a cancer, and they had a cancer, you know. On investigation, they did. I mean, and it was their dream that was the only clue that they had the cancer.
And there are certain ways that manifests symbolically. Quite frequently, when somebody dreams of what apparently is a pregnancy in some other part of their body, like if they have
mm-hmm.
a pregnant arm or a pregnant leg, that's often symbolic of some kind of a tumor or something growing which shouldn't be growing. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't ignore those dreams is what I'm trying to say. You know, don't just say, oh, it was just a dream, because some dreams are just dreams. Some dreams are probably just a bunch of subconscious stuff that we're working out. You know, we're just working through it, and we don't need to remember it. But sometimes when your higher self or your guides need to get you some information, sometimes they're going to do it through a dream.
Yeah. And it should be understood that there are different for people who are interested in doing therapeutic work with dreams, that there are different levels of the, there are five different categories of theories of dreams. Okay. There's the neurological ones that usually some hard-nosed scientists who really don't think that dreams amount to anything spiritually, often atheistic, agnostic orientation. There are folks who think that dreams are primarily about cognitive processing, you know, long-term and short-term and the long-term memory, that sort of thing. There are psychodynamic theories which involve, which, you know, Freudian extraction, involved in the notion that, you know, we can't get deeper than language and culture. All human beings are conditioned totally and absolutely since birth, but only since birth. And then there are, you know, the humanistic theories of Carl Jung, our collective archetypes, universal archetypes, collective unconscious, which does acknowledge things deeper than language and culture, but not necessarily reincarnation. Then you have the outright spiritual theories, which do accept reincarnation. And you want the last two categories if you're going to deal meaningfully with dreams at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are therapists who do dream work, but who don't buy the notion that dreams have any deeper spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm.
The great majority do, but some don't.
Yeah, well, you know, in the ancient worlds, dreaming was very revered and was paid attention to.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the modern world, the danger is that we just say, oh, it's just cognitive, you know, stuff that doesn't really mean anything. Because we just think that nothing that important can happen in the dream world.
It's interesting you mention that, because that is the one area of spiritual retreat theme that you don't see as much out there, which I think you'll see more of in the future. I mean, to go somewhere explicitly, just like the ancient Greeks and so forth did, to incubate the dream in a holy place, that's something which should be done more often than it is done. It's always been interesting to me why people don't do more of that. When you look at the Omega catalog, the Kripalu catalog, and so forth, there's very little of that sort of thing. So it's interesting, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yeah, sure. David at worldspirituality.com is the email. That's easy to remember. David Lowe, msphd.com. No E on the end of the name. David Lowe, msphd.com. Dreamwork practitioner. Yes.
And David has a wonderful book on universal spirituality that I often recommend to people when they say, can you just recommend one book? And so he's my one book go-to for universal spirituality.
If you're atheist agnostic and you're looking for something, if you're sick of the Western approach, the Orthodox Western approach, you're confused about the Eastern stuff, if you're looking for answers, you know, and if you don't want something too dense,
it's not dense at all. It's very understandable. That's what's great about
it. The pictures and word balloons and everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the universal. What do I call it? Universal spiritual philosophy and practice. Yeah.
Right.
It's there.
Yeah. It's on his website, I'm sure. Okay, well, thanks, David, for joining us. We've been talking about dreams, the road to universal spirituality. Hopefully you learned something today. If nothing else, you've learned to pay attention to a warning in your dream or something that's weird. You need to maybe investigate it and see what your higher self or your guides are trying to tell you. Thanks a lot,
Absolutely.
David.
Thank you very much, Susan. We'll do it again. Take care.
We will. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.